This episode of AHLA Speaking of Health Law is brought to you by AHLA members and donors like you. For more information, visit AmericanHealthLaw.org.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Kim Looney. I'm a partner at K&L Gates in Nashville, here today speaking on private equity. It's a subject that I spoke on also at the Advisory and Providers Conference. And my co-presenter today is John Kelly.
Hi, Kim. Thanks so much and welcome, everyone. My name is John Kelly. I'm a partner at Barnes & Thornburg and chair of their national healthcare practice. I've had the pleasure of speaking with Kim on this topic about private equity and healthcare, and we're excited to share some time with you all today. So, Kim, let me start right at the top. What is private equity? What does that mean to you?
Well, I think it's something that it is important to kind of set out the framework. And that is, you know, everyone knows it's money. I mean, you know, but it's a particular class of capital. So it's a class of capital that generally invests in mature companies. It's not early stage companies, but it is companies that the private equity firms feel are undervalued or underperforming and that there's significant growth potential. So that it's something that they can help this company get a little bit better and stronger. So, you know, I guess that's part of it too. Why are they interested so much in private equity, John?
Yeah, well, I think, I think folks in private equity, right, they're always looking for that next opportunity. They're looking for places where they can invest and grow money. And that's exactly what we're talking about here in private equity. It's the money. I think what's happened is private equity firms, they see a particular value in the healthcare industry. They're willing to take on certain risk that maybe others might not be willing to take on. And also, if you take a step back and we think about where healthcare is today, we've got an aging patient population that needs healthcare services. We have a rising prevalence of chronic disease. There continues to be development of new drugs, new devices. There's a lot of innovation in healthcare, just a lot happening here. So I think from the private equity perspective, they looked at this area and said, okay, this is a place where we can go in, we can invest, and hopefully get really positive returns. And so, you know, that's sort of one side of it, right? The other side is, well, what are they actually bringing to the table as from a private equity perspective, Kim? And you know, that's a little bit different, right? What they're bringing to the table is they're bringing that investment, they're bringing that money and that infusion of capital that, let's face it, a lot of providers and different healthcare services might need today. So instead of going, you know, sort of a traditional financial route in terms of trying to get access to funds, private equity has become a new place where they can look at that and seek that type of investment. But they also don't just bring money. They also bring business expertise, potentially. They bring the ability to try to maybe increase efficiency. But I know we're going to get into this. We're going to get into the fact that there is a lot of different opinions, some good and some bad, about private equity and healthcare. And so let's talk about sort of the time commitment when you're an investor.
So, you know, private equity and investors have different time commitments, basically. The private equity firm is looking for not a completely speedy out, but something more on the shorter side, like maybe a 3 to 5 year out. They might stay a little bit longer. They're generally not going to be able to exit sooner than 3 years, but 3 to 5, maybe 7. But they want the investor to be invested and all in for a period, a minimum of 10 years. And there would have to be very significant penalties for the early withdrawals and potentially also the ability to extend that term. And part of the reason for that is because they're trying to build value in this enterprise. And one of the ways they can build value is to lock down those providers that are bringing the value to the table. So if they can kind of herd them and get them to doing some things that they feel will help increase the value in the entity, then, you know, it's a good investment for them. And somebody down the road might also be interested in that investment. And, you know, some of it, you know, you look at what particular type of healthcare segment of the healthcare market is private equity interested in right now. And a lot of that is the physician practices. And so when we think about the physician practices, one of the reasons they're interested is because a lot of the control of the healthcare spend and the healthcare dollars are spent is done by the physicians. They do control a lot of what happens once the patient leaves their office. They control what tests are ordered. They control what specialists they're referred to if they're a primary care doc. And a lot of the private equity is looking at different specialties. There's a lot of private equity, oncology, gastro, cardiology now. Dental is a big area for private equity investment. So a lot of different areas have been sort of targeted and focused. And the reason for that, kind of what John was saying earlier, is because they're not operating as efficiently as they could be. And there's been this historic fragmentation. And so by kind of taking that off the table, they feel like they can deliver a better product and increase the value in the healthcare entity in which they're investing. So, John, how much money are we talking about has PE been investing?
Oh, it's been actually a pretty amazing ride here for private equity and healthcare. And it really started as we started coming out of the pandemic. And back in 2021, I'm not sure anyone would have predicted that, but the number of deals rose 36% in terms of private equity and healthcare related deals. And it went from 380 deals to 515 deals. I mean, that really like a massive increase, right? Probably the biggest increase ever. And the value of those deals rose from $66 billion to $151 billion. So again, it doubled, more than doubled, just in 1 year. Then when you get to 2022, there was a slight slowdown, but it was still the second highest year on record for deal value and deal count. And that included even a 20% drop in deals, but again, a still massive number of deals that took place. So 2021, 2022 were absolutely huge in this space. When we get to 2023, they started to see a little bit of a decrease there, coming out of 2022. Still a number of deals in the healthcare sector, but not like we had seen. But signs are pointing in the right direction here going into 2024, because as we got to the end of the prior year, the end of 2023, we started seeing some more growth in the buyout market. We think that inflation is leveling out due to the higher interest rates. We think that healthcare wage inflation is falling, and we think that the market is improving for private equity investors in healthcare. So all the trends are going in the right direction here, here in 2024, moving into Q2, Q3, Q4. So again, still a hot area, still an area that private equity believes in, and an area that I think we're going to continue to see investment.
I think one of the things we also see is private equity is not really operating under the radar anymore. There seems to be increased scrutiny of all these healthcare deals. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, it part of it is, I believe that there's some questions right around who really owns entities, who's really making decisions around entities. And there's also, let's face it, Kim, there tends to be a bit of a PR issue for private equity and healthcare. I mean, it's been pretty rough on them in the public. And so two sides, right, to this story, like we mentioned before. So you've got the public scrutiny's increasing, right? People focusing and having concerns over cost, over the quality of healthcare, over access to care, right? If you think about sort of in a community and private equity comes in, let's say it's a nursing home and they invest in that nursing home, or they eventually, come into the nursing home and then the nursing home changes its operations or it eventually dissolves, that starts creating issues of access to care. And again, this issue around transparency has been something that we're going to continue to talk about through this podcast, but one that has really come to the forefront from a regulatory oversight perspective and even up on the Hill. But as these number of deals continue to grow and private equity continues to be involved in healthcare, I think you're only going to see an increase in the oversight and scrutiny, because there's just a lot of questions and folks want to know who can be held responsible when there are issues. And so I don't think that's going to change at any point in time.
I agree. And I think it looks like, especially as far as nursing homes, that government scrutiny is increasing. And I think one of the reasons is because nursing homes serve a very vulnerable patient population. It's definitely nursing homes. People are very elderly generally in nursing homes these days. And there have been studies that have shown that the quality is lower with PE investment, that the staffing levels are lower with PE investment. And so it's sort of the low-hanging fruit. I don't think it means that their focus is stopping with nursing homes by any stretch of the imagination. I think that it was just an easy place kind of for them to start and someplace that there had been a lot of information in the press about that. And, I think that that's just something we may see a little bit more of.
Yeah.
Think about that. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. I agree. I mean, and if you just read the tea leaves, right, we see the SEC comes out, right, with rules around transparency. Then just in January of this year, HHS OIG comes out with some rules around expanded ownership and understanding who's actually in control and who's making decisions, and the transparency being, again, the key word of the day when it comes to healthcare investment, especially when it's private equity. So, to your point, there's been some data, right, that has been very challenging for private equity. And then there's folks that really support it from an innovation and a need for capital. Let's face it, there's a lot of healthcare services struggling, but this issue of transparency is only going to get, I think, louder and more aggressive. And we're seeing it not just at the federal level. We mentioned SEC and obviously HHS OIG, but we're seeing it at the state level too. The states and the feds want to know who's involved. And in fact, just in the last few weeks, there was a joint FTC and DOJ, sort of step over to the antitrust world, not just sort of just basic regulatory healthcare quality of care and access to care issues. But now the FTC and DOJ hosted a public workshop, and they literally talked about, quote, the corporate greed and healthcare consolidation and the role of private equity. So again, I think that this is only going to continue.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I will say, and it does have to do a lot with when they see things in the newspaper. And yes, when you talk about a PR problem, some of those headlines are extremely sensational. I mean, I was looking at one the other day, and you do have to wonder to some extent. This was dental related. It was a 2-year-old who died after receiving 6 crowns. I mean, I'm not sure why a 2-year-old was going to the dentist to begin with, but apparently there was a loss of oxygen and he died. So, it was a PE-backed dental practice. That just makes for sensational headlines and certainly means somebody has to be looking out for all these issues. And, some of the quality issues that they've seen are, an increase in falls. You have double surgical site infections, even when the surgical volume has declined. There seems to be higher cost and reduced staffing levels in hospitals, and there seems to be a higher death rate in nursing homes when they're private equity backed. Now, that's all the bad side that we can talk about private equity, but I agree that we've talked about there's lots of money going into healthcare that would not be available to provide services that are available at this point without the private equity money. So it is not just, some people would paint it as just the devil incarnate, private equity, oh my gosh, let's get them out of healthcare. But there are lots of reasons to have private equity in healthcare. And, we're not going to argue about that one as far as, whether it's a good or bad thing, because it does some very good things. We go back and think about it. There is a lot, when you talk about the increased scrutiny, talk a little bit about some of what the states are doing for enforcement. I mean, it's not just your federal anymore with your antitrust, with their Hart-Scott-Rodino that really only looked at your very large healthcare provider transactions. Seems like the states are getting into it now as well.
Absolutely. And again, there's been already federal oversight, right, in this world in terms of watching what's happening when there's investments in healthcare and analyzing deals. You have FTC, DOJ, SEC all partaking in that, HHS OIG now as well. But what's happened is state governments are saying, hey, wait a minute, these are our communities. We want to understand what's happening in our communities and understand the future of healthcare delivery systems in their backyard. And so they've become much more active in terms of enacting legislation that targets healthcare transactions, not-for-profit facilities, hospitals, any other types of healthcare transactions and services. And these state laws, again, focus on transparency. They want to understand when there's going to be a deal in advance. They want to understand what is the deal, who's involved in it, and they want to have the time to allow their attorney general or another state agency in that state to be able to conduct a thorough review, ask the right questions, and understand the nature of the deal and what the structure of the deal is going to look like, and what is this going to mean for healthcare and their community. So we're starting to see a lot of examples of that. New York enacted legislation back in August of 2023, requiring 30 days of notice to the New York State Department of Health of any, and I'll call, it's in quotes, material transaction involving healthcare entities that provide management services. We've got other examples of this type of I'll call it transparency statutes in healthcare California, Colorado, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Nevada, Washington, Hawaii, a number of them have all been going down this road. And I think you're going to see, of course, more to follow, right? I mean, other states are going to see this and say, hey, wait a minute, we need to understand this as well. So again, I think no slowdown in this effort. And the hope is it's going to make deals just better. But to your point, I do think that, you know, there can be some good from this as well. And we can't forget that in the states, and federal agencies can't forget that either. But when we talk about a healthcare deal, Kim, you know, you do deal work. What are the type of compliance issues and regulatory issues that you see in a private equity deal? What are the kind of things you need to be careful of?
Well, there are quite a few, and I'm not going into those, but I do want to go back just to you talking about all the state oversight, because when you think about it from a deal perspective, that's going to be very challenging. Because if you're doing a deal and it's across multiple states, you're going to have to know what the requirements are in each state, just like your licensure requirements in each state. This is just another layer and a level of complexity to the deal that you're going to have to look at. So when you think, and that's, you know, so we'll add that to our list of our regulatory and compliance issues. Your state, you know, antitrust is going to be a little bit bigger. But so you got your federal antitrust, your state antitrust, we're talking about, you know, you can have state fee splitting requirements. There might be different licensure requirements. And once again, anytime you're dealing with the state, that's a state by state, case by case basis, trying to deal with that. You know, your anti-kickback is going to be an issue. It's a little bit different than in a deal with, you know, like provider to provider, because you don't have the same, quite the same concerns, because your PE company is not doing any referring. The doctors aren't referring the PE company. The PE company is not paying them to refer to something, you know, so it's a little bit different from a regulatory standpoint. But one of the bigger issues you have to think about when they're talking about provider practices is the corporate practice of medicine. Corporate practice of medicine is still alive and well in many, many states in the United States, with each of them having their own little quirk sometimes to the regulatory framework. So that's a piece you kind of have to be looking at as well. When you think about the Stark and the anti-kickback issues, those aren't necessarily unique to PE transactions. They're available and, you know, have to worry about them in all healthcare. But what you do have to worry about sometimes is if it's not, you know, if it's somebody that's new to PE and healthcare, they might not really understand or have experience with the healthcare regulatory landscape. And it's hard sometimes to educate people and get them up to speed on the fact that what they might have been doing for years and all the other industries in which they've been investing money is not something that they can do in the healthcare space. And so that's sometimes difficult to do, and also especially difficult depending on the client. But I think another piece of it is, you know, your risk tolerance may be different for private equity also, but no more is private equity staying, you know, out from under the lens of the federal regulators or the state regulators. They can be held liable for things that are being done wrong as well. So, you know, the regulatory concerns that you kind of see with the PE deals are around the management fees, you know, the earnouts, the roll forward equity, marketing, advertising, what money is going where, and is it being, you know, kind of appropriately spent? And, you know, as I said before, the real challenge is that what, you know, terms and provisions you might have an agreement if you were dealing with an industry other than healthcare, you can't do those in healthcare. So I think that makes it, just makes it a little bit challenging. And also to be, you know, to be quite honest, we've talked about this a little bit before, but, you know, it's one reason why the enforcement is on your private equity. I mean, John mentioned how much money there is in private equity and how much it's grown, you know, biggest growth in 21, but it's not like it's not like there's not still a lot of money going into healthcare, even though it may have slowed down a little bit. So, you know, it's increasingly important in the healthcare industry. So as it gains importance, it's going to come under more scrutiny. It's, you know, the money can be seen as driving change in healthcare. You know, a lot of those changes are really good, but some of them from a quality standpoint and the headlines that we see may not be so good. So, you know, that's kind of something that you have to be careful about. And they want to make sure, you know, part of it is that PE is not pressuring the providers to do things that maybe they shouldn't be doing, that they're not worried so much on the money and not really worrying about the patient care. I mean, when all's said and done in healthcare, the patient care is the most important, and the quality of the patient care is the most important thing that is going on in this industry. And, you just want to make sure that the financial considerations aren't going to harm the quality and access to care. And I think that's when, you're thinking about somebody who's not a provider, who's got the money in healthcare. And I think that that's something that is looked at, especially these days. I think the enforcement agencies also, what they kind of focus on is they, it is partly a transparency thing. And what is the PE investor's involvement? Are they really involved in the day-to-day operations, or the day-to-day operations left to, if it's a physician practice or whatever provider entity we're talking about, what is their role in decision making? They shouldn't have any say in really the physician's independent medical judgment or those clinical decisions. So you have to make sure they don't interfere with any of that. And, does the PE investor understand the risk that's involved with the healthcare entity that it's dealing with? So all of those things mean that there's going to be a focus on healthcare for some time to come, as long as the money continues to flow in that. So, I think one of the things, John, that we should tell everybody next is just a little bit about what can they do to limit the risk. And the risk may be, one of the risks from the PE side is, the whistleblower action could wipe out the entire value of the portfolio company. If there has to be a settlement, if there's defense fees, their reputation, the PE firm, as I said before, can have direct exposure to liability under the False Claims Act and the state law equivalents, and also the HHS OIG inclusion administrative action. So just because it's handing over the money does not mean that it's free from any issues in the operation of the entity. So have to make sure how much involvement there is in what they're doing, and make sure that as they're increasing the value, that they're not violating any False Claims Act or anything else. So,
Well,
I
and
don't
that's
want to.
the hammer, right, Kim? I mean, that False Claims Act, and we've seen settlements where, Diabetic Care Rx, South Bay Mental Health Center, I mean, these different settlements that have come through where it's not just the PE firm that's paying money, but some of the individuals as well, in the millions of
Oh, yeah.
dollars. And so it's the company, it's the private equity firm, it's individuals and executives who, may be aware of issues and not addressing them. But to your point, I mean, that risk is out there. And I think that's why when you ask the question of what can you do to limit the risk? I mean, to me, it's number one is just due diligence, due diligence, due diligence. I mean, you have to be out in front of this and have counsel that understands healthcare, that really understands it, that can guide you through a transaction and make sure you understand and can identify risks and deal with them before you inherit them and it becomes your problem.
No, I agree. I mean, and not just are you doing your due diligence, but what are you doing on a going forward basis? Have you got a robust compliance program? This is not a time for the PE company to come in and decide they need to cut costs, and the place to cut costs is the compliance activities. No, that is never a good idea, and definitely would not be a good look if something goes wrong later. So, what are they
That's a
doing?
yeah, it's a horrible
How
story.
much government related business do they have? I mean,
Yeah.
are they going to be something, do they do like more than 50% government? So they're going to have a big target on their back from the beginning. If it's something that does not do a lot of government business, but a lot of them are involved in women's health. That's definitely a lot of government payments. So, you got to look at what is the PE company trying to do? What are their business objectives? I mean, they're trying to build volumes that increase revenue, increase value, but they have to do that in a legally compliant way. And so that's kind of, to some extent, like any healthcare business. But I think it's something that with private equity, they're still new enough to the healthcare world. I mean, not like it was yesterday, but there's still a lot of private equity getting into healthcare that's not been in healthcare before, and making sure that they understand the nuances and the risks involved with working in the healthcare space. I
Well,
think,
and
please go
yeah,
ahead.
no, Kim, I was going to just say, you made such a good point about the compliance piece, and that's not the place to cut costs. I mean, nowadays, right, DOJ, HHS, OIG, they are very firm that it's not that you should have an effective compliance program, but you must have one. And that is a very tough story to sell if you're in front of DOJ. I mean, I've been in the room on both sides of this at DOJ and now in the private sector. And they're going to ask you about your compliance program and how did this happen and what did the compliance program do and how did it react? And if your first message is, well, we used to have, 20 compliance officers, now we have four, that's going to be a tough call.
Yeah,
A tough
that's
conversation.
a problem. The optics of that are not good unless your four people are now working four times as many hours and they get zero sleep at all, then you do not have as robust a compliance program as you had. Now, maybe you had a robust more people because you had some issues, and now that you've cleared up the issues, maybe you don't need as many people, but 20 to 4, those optics aren't good. So that's just never going to be a good idea. When you're going back to your diligence and your compliance and everything else, that sometimes also in addition to lawyers, you need more people on your team. You need some, consultants with relevant healthcare regulatory expertise also. You need to be looking at, ongoing audits of your own business to make sure that you're being compliant in the way that you're supposed to be. Make sure the company understands those compliance issues. Man, they got to address those immediately. You do not say, oh, let's wait till the next quarterly board meeting to talk about that compliance issue. We've already got a full agenda this time. No, that is not, all of those things just do not look good. And, you just got to make sure that they're dealing with that compliance. Make sure if there's incentives for anybody that they comport with the anti-kickback, the False Claims Act laws. I mean, just like anything else, the government's going to follow the trail of the money. And where is the money gone? And what is it being used for? And what's the purposes for which it's being used? And if it kind of goes back to, if it sounds too good to be true, it's probably too good to be true. So definitely be careful with what everybody's doing. I think you talked about the money before. I mean, when you look at how much money there is in private equity, government might see private equity as having deep pockets. I mean, who are they going to go after? They have a lot of money. They have a lot of money, that they have put at risk in these companies. And, as we said before, they could lose it all depending on how they operate. So that's not a good thing. I'm sure you've probably got another couple other tidbits we can tell people about how they can mitigate the risk.
Well, I think again, it's the due diligence on the front end. You, like you said, focusing on how you're going to operate after the deal and the transaction, your compliance program, making sure that it's effective. And look, just keep doing, the right things around that program, getting the legal help you need. Don't hire your buddy down the street who does real estate to advise you on healthcare. But I do think, Kim, I mean, should we give a teaser for what's coming? Can we give a teaser?
How about that? Well, let me go back to hiring your buddy. Yeah, especially in smaller towns, you have to be really careful because you don't have the healthcare expertise that you necessarily need, but you're not doing anybody any favors if you don't hire counsel with healthcare expertise. Somebody that does this day in and day out, not somebody that dabbles in healthcare because the rules or the interpretation of the rules change so frequently that you just got to be up to date on all of that. So, yeah, a teaser, things to come. John and I, along with another healthcare expert on the government side, are going to be speaking at the annual meeting on private equity. So, if you come to the annual meeting, be sure and look us up.
That's right. Well, we appreciate it. Kim, thanks so much for this. Thanks to the HLA. Hope folks will join us at the annual meeting on this topic since it is continually evolving and going to be here for a while. So thanks everyone for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe to AHLA Speaking of Health Law wherever you get your podcasts. To learn more about AHLA and the educational resources available to the health law community, visit AmericanHealthLaw.org.